Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's podcast of the Best of Breakfast Show with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, game show superhost Stephen Mulhern on his latest primetime ITV show, Rolling In It. Tickets, please, as broadcaster Michael Portillo invites us on another train journey with his latest excellent series on BBC Two. Silicon Valley design don Bill Burnett tells us about his new book, Designing Your Work Life. And hot pop god Ronan Keating takes us through his new solo anniversary album, 2020. All that and loads more still to come. Now, Vassos, tell us who's our first guest.
We have lots to thank our next guest for, from magic music to matchmaking. He is a proper superstar. He's just released his 11th solo album, 2020. He's just welcomed another baby to the world. Aww. And he once introduced Chris to his wife, Natasha. Please welcome the really rather great Ronan Keating.
Morning, Ronan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Can I thank you for all my children, first of all, before we move on? Thank you for that.
How is your wonderful wife and children?
Great.
All well, please,
well, four out of five, by the way. We had a grandson, a new grandson a couple of weeks ago. So Tasha's a grandma now.
Oh.
The lady you introduced me to on that golf course that afternoon is now a grandma twice over. Can you believe it, Ronan?
Holy moly. Congratulations. I didn't realise. That's amazing.
Right.
Oh,
well, we're five kids in, two grandkids. Now, little Sonny, our newest grandson, is now the 18th great-grandchild of great-grandma Barbara. Where are you up to? Are you coming near to our kid count? Anywhere near to us now, Ronan?
Okay, I have five children now, so I have the same.
Five
not
all,
grandchildren,
five
thank
all,
God,
five
yes.
All, five
yep, yep. My eldest boy is 21, Jack, and he wouldn't be a million miles away from possibly settling down, and I could catch up with you, but I can't see that happening in the next 5 years,
but
4 years.
Just from the kids' point of view, so we're maybe 3 months. So we're five all from a kid's point of view. Are we going for a decider or not? I just need to know. I'm happy either way, just so long as I know.
No. The snip is looming. My wife and I have had the conversation, and I'm going for it. I'm going for the snip.
Right, okay, so that's definitely going to happen. This isn't going to be in any papers tomorrow, is it? Ronan's gone
no,
for this.
No. I'm going for the snip. I'm hoping that I get it. I'm hoping I get a freebie. That's why I'm telling you on the radio.
Many people resorting to playing Snap are under lockdown. Okay, Ronan going for a snip under lockdown. Okay.
So,
now, you know the vasectomy is what we're talking about. Let's face it here. Is reversible, I think, within the first 12 months. So you're still...
Okay.
So this conversation could still be happening.
It could be.
What about this one, Ronan? Okay, so our twins... were the miracles, as all babies are anyway, but they were particular miracles of IVF and the fourth or fifth round of IVF. And I am no longer required. So Tash still has a couple of frozen eggs that are already done. They're already, everything that needs to be happened to these eggs is required. And every 3 or 4 months, she gets me signing these forms again. I said, what's this for? She said, for the continuing refrigeration of the eggs. I said, but I thought we were done. She said, no, we are. I said, well, what's this about? She said, no, it doesn't matter. what do you do there, Ronan? What's going on there?
What is going on there?
I think
maybe you should ask questions.
I think it could be 6-5 to the Evanses come this time next year.
It could be.
Right.
It could be all out. Yeah.
Okay, 2020. Tell us about this album. Come on, off you go.
11th studio record, which is mental. I went solo 20 years ago, When You Say Nothing at All.
Well,
and basically, I was making this record after leaving Boyzone wrapped up. End of last year, after 26 years, 25 years, I just thought I was just going headstrong into a new solo album. And I realized that it was 20 years since I went solo. I thought, well, I should really probably, out of respect for that, tip of the cap to 20 years, make a record that kind of shows what I've done, what I've been through, the people. And this album kind of organically happened like that. Robbie Williams is on there, Shania Twain, Ed Sheeran, Alison Krauss, Emily Sandé, Lena Nesbitt, Claire Bowen. That wasn't planned. The collaboration thing wasn't planned. It just kind of happened by accident. And what a beautiful accident. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I'm honoured.
Yeah, that's not one accident. That's not one fortunate accident. That's like nine fortunate accidents.
No.
Unbelievable. A pile-up of good fortune. How does that come about? Do you make the calls? Do they make the calls? Do they hear a buzz on the grapevine? What?
Well, it started with Emily Sandé. I'm a big fan of Emily's, and I've been trying to, you know, work with her for a long time. And finally, our paths crossed, and, you know, the diaries were right, and we finally got to do a record together. And then with Rob, it was Stephen Gately's 10-year anniversary last October, and we were out doing we did Loose Women and a few of the tellies, and the boys and I, out of respect for Steele, talk about Steele, celebrate his life. And I came home that evening, I was standing in the kitchen, and my email went, and it was an email from Robbie to say, mate, I saw you on TV today, forgot that I'd written this song for Stephen 10 years ago. Here it is, you know, it's for you. And I was like, what the? Standing there with tears in my eyes listening to this song. And I said, Rob, we've got to do something, man. We've got to do this record. He said, let's do it. And then we got into the studio and created this song. And then it kind of snowballed from there. People started, you know, meeting people or you know, I reached out to people, Ed or Alison Krauss, to get her on When You Say Nothing at All. That was a big deal for me. I mean, she sang the original. It was Richard Curtis sent me that version of Alison Krauss. And I thought, well, this would be amazing 20 years later to work with Alison. You know, that came off, and Ed played guitar on it, which was very special. So, yeah, just these amazing moments that created this album.
What a lovely story. And, you know, this is, you don't need to hear me saying this because you probably embarrass you, but this is a testament to how well-regarded Ronan is in the business and as a person. So, because this is people coming wanting... No, but it's true, though, Ronan. You are a lovely, lovely human being. 2020 out now. RonanKeating.com is where you need to go. What's the chances of this tour happening, pal? 4th of Jan to the 2nd of Feb?
Well, you've got your finger on the pulse more than I do. You tell me, pal. Hopefully it will. I mean, you know, we are they're slightly relaxing the laws. We can now do concerts outdoors. So that's kind of helping. Whether or not we can get back into theatres and so on. You know, we can sit next to each other on a plane or on a train as long as we're wearing a mask. So why we can't get back into venues and watch our favorite, you know, West End shows or concerts, I don't know. But fingers crossed over the next week or two, we're going to find out more. And I hope January happens.
Ronan, lots of love. Thank you for my children. Thank you for my marriage. Goodbye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
I don't need to know any more about our next guest because I love him, but in case you do, here's Vassos.
If it's shiny, showbiz and silly, there's a strong chance our next guest is hosting it. The new celeb-packed game show Rolling It In It is coming to ITV very soon, so please welcome a man that always gives it welly on your telly. It's the consistently brilliant Stephen Mulhern.
Morning, Steve.
Wow.
Morning, Stephen.
What an intro. Good morning, pal.
So once again, here we go. Here's the intro. It's shiny, showbiz and silly. There's a strong chance, if it is, our next guest is hosting it. The new Celeb Pack game show, Rolling In It, is coming to ITV very soon. Celeb Packed. I never stop saying how good you are. I never get invited onto any of your shows. Celebrity catchphrase. And now this celebrity Rolling In It. And not only that, In For A Penny, your last series, Stephen, we even sponsored the damn thing. And I still don't get an invite.
Okay. Well, this is the perfect time. Chris, will you come on, please?
No.
Next year, the Rolling In It. And you know what? We don't even have celebs on In For A Penny, but you can.
Well, look, if you tell me where you're going to do the next In For A Penny, I could just, you know, be coincidentally shopping at the nearest Lidl or whatever. Couldn't I?
Okay, we can sort that.
So I was going to ask you, first of all, about In For A Penny, because, you know, with social distancing and all that, if there was a series scheduled to be filmed, you'd had to put that on hold. But I hear you're doing one very soon, in fact.
Yeah, we start next Tuesday. We're in Torquay next Tuesday. And honestly, the team that we've got, I like the team that you've got. We worked so hard on making sure that the games are right. And obviously, this has been the hardest thing because obviously all the games have to be socially distanced, obviously. So we've come up with new games like... So we've got the piggy bank shake, which is where we've got a clear piggy bank with just 1p in it. And all you've got is 30 seconds to shake it out. We've got pedestrian question, which I'll try with you now. Let's give this a quick go. So 60 seconds. I won't do all 10 questions, but I'll give you three. So, for example, I'll say to you, OK, time starts now. Who do you think's got the best sense of humour, Barry from EastEnders or Barry Manilow?
I'm not playing because I've not been invited on your show. I'm not playing. Sorry. No chance. You're not going to give me an hour. You're going to say, well, there you go. That was sort of a celebrity thing on the radio. We did it for three questions. I'm not being part of it, Stephen. You've got no chance, mate. Absolutely no. Talk to my agent.
Okay.
Barry Manilow.
Actually, I think... No, incorrect. No,
why?
I don't...
You can't be incorrect. That's what I think. That's my opinion. There's no right answer.
I'm the judge.
What?
One more. What's my worst nightmare? Magic being banned or Ryland hosting Catchphrase?
Well, hang on a minute. You said three questions. Now you said one more. Now we're down to two.
But you were banning me from your show just a minute ago. You were saying you're going to play.
Okay, I think Ryland hosting Catchphrase because he's surprisingly good at hosting game shows.
I agree with you. Correct. Okay, final one. What would you rather watch... Ben Shepherd's tipping point or Alexander Armstrong's pointless?
I'm too confused because now we're back to three. I don't understand what's going on. Now you've got to give me the
because you're changing the rules.
So what was the question
anyway,
again?
Anyway, we're filming from Tuesday. All is good.
What was the question again?
What would you rather watch, Ben Shepherd's tipping point or Alexander Armstrong's pointless?
I think tipping point because it's over quicker.
Correct.
No, I like pointless. It just takes forever. That's the only thing.
I know. They're both great shows. But the other one, which is socially distant, which I think is going to be a stormer, especially if the weather stays like this, is somebody lies on a floor. They've got an ice cream cone in their mouth. Mm-hmm. And their partner or brother, whoever they live with, has to try and get a scoop of ice cream. They've got three chances. Drop it from the ladder. Get it on the cone. If they do it, they win £99. And if they get a flake in, they win £100.
I think you should do this. Okay. You know I love all this stuff anyway, right? So same thing. Okay, ice cream in somebody's mouth who you love, right? They're lying down. You get a driver, a golf club, right? It's how far you can hit the ice cream out of somebody who you love's mouth without killing them, right? And it's called the ice cream cone driving range, and you line five people up with five people they love. And it's whoever can hit the ice cream furthest, or get the ice cream furthest, or the flake furthest, actually, without causing serious injury to whoever it is they're doing it with.
Do you know what the irony is? We were trying to come up with a crazy golf.
There you go.
I think we've now got it. If that does make the air and that somebody does get injured, are you going to take the responsibility?
It depends whether I'm getting paid for that particular format point or not.
But see what I mean? Mm. You're too quick for me.
I know they say this every time you come on the show, but you're so good on the telly. We could watch you forever on our telly. We think you're just brilliant. Oh. And you can't fake that sort of care and kindness and consideration you give. I mean, you take the mickey, but it's all right. It's never cruel. It's so cool. You know, and yeah. is your favourite thing in the world? If you had to pick one of the three things that you're good at, playing the piano, doing magic or being on the telly, you know, if they all paid the same or whatever, took the same amount of time or whatever,
yeah.
Which would you pick? What's your favourite thing to do?
If I could do a show on the telly that was solely with members of the public, which obviously I'd do with In For A Penny,
yeah.
But if it was in any way combined with magic, then that would be a dream. But In For A Penny, I've got to be honest, out of all the shows, although it's the hardest one, is my favourite because it's with members
so
of the public.
Good. So
you
good.
Know, I think members of the public all day long over people off the telly. So, yeah.
It's funny.
They just give so much more.
Because you do With In For A Penny with regards to game shows. What Noel Edmonds is, what was it called?
House Party.
Deal or No Deal did. Because what Deal or No Deal did was that they took the creators, the genius creators of it, I think were Dutch, took the most exciting bit of a game show, which is right at the end when the whole game show's over and you've won whatever you've won. Right, okay, do you want to gamble? Okay, you've won £5,000 or you've won the speedboat or whatever you've won. Do you want to gamble for the da-da? Which Ant and Dec still do now, which is brilliant. And they took the most exciting bit of a game show and they said, well, this is the whole show. And what you've done with In For A Penny, you've taken the... What we used to do with Don't Forget Your Toothbrush, which was... The games, which what people loved, but we had other stuff going on. You've just taken that bit and just done that loads of times. Is there a show on telly anywhere in the world, right, on prime time that costs less to make? And by the way, that's no slight. Costs less to make and attracts more viewers than your show. I don't think there is. It's the best value for money show ITV have, and I hope they realise it.
Well, thank you, because honestly, we love doing it, and I think you, like you say, you can tell that. But it honestly is a team effort. But I love it. I love it. I love it. And I hope ITV know that as well. So fingers crossed. We'll soon find out.
Okay,
we're not back to Series 4.
Yeah, we haven't talked about your new show, Rolling In It, at all, because I haven't been invited on it. So thank you, Stephen. Goodbye. Just watch it. Anything he's on is amazing.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Top travel, fascinating history and exceptionally loud jackets. Our next guest has it all going on. The incredible seventh series of great continental railway journeys starts tonight on BBC Two at 8 p.m. So please welcome a man who frazzles your brain on a choo-choo train. It's the one and only Michael Portillo.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. What an elegant introduction. Thank you so much.
Elegant is good, isn't it? I like elegant because you can have elegant quantum physics theories, can't you? They have a certain beauty, a certain naturalness to them, if you know
it's
what I mean.
It's a versatile word,
yes. Yes.
But thank you for having me back.
Well, Michael, you're very welcome. How are you doing, old bean?
Doing extremely well. Survived lockdown well. I'm very lucky. I live in the centre of London. I've got a garden. We've got wonderful parks. I'm doing well. And we're hoping to start filming again on Sunday.
Okay. And you've got a new job as well, haven't you? Right here with us.
Yes, a couple of studios along from you, perhaps, is it? At Times Radio.
What do you mean, is it? What do you just fake it till you make it, Michael? Yeah, we're all one big happy family here, for heaven's sake. Come on, we go out for a beer after every show, don't we?
I remember them well. 7 till 10 on a Friday is my slot on Times Radio.
Okay, well done.
I'm loving it.
Good. And everybody's loving Times Radio. Of course they are. Part of
good.
The wireless group here. Right, tell us about your new show.
Well, you may remember that we travel around using a guidebook called a Bradshaw's normally. And now our guidebook is 1936 and I'm travelling through Europe. So that means I'm travelling through a very difficult period of European history. I start with the Spanish Civil War, which broke out in 1936 and which involved my family. In Sicily, I'm talking about how the Mafia and Mussolini battled against each other. In Germany, I'm going to the site of the 1936 Berlin Olympics and to the Zeppelin field where the Nazis held their famous rallies in Nuremberg. I'm in Austria. I look at the balcony where Hitler declared the Anschluss between Austria and Germany. For something slightly different, I go to Sweden. They, meanwhile, were not getting involved in World War II. They were developing their welfare state.
What a great programme. What a great education. Why isn't this show and other shows like it? And there are millions of them nowadays. You know, why isn't it part of the syllabus for schools? Because what a great education coming from you, coming from the heart, coming from your heritage. I mean, wonderful. It's more than just getting on and off trains, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I sometimes curse the fact that we gave it the title Great Continental Railway Journeys, because it's put some people off if they don't happen to be interested in choo-choos. But as far as the syllabus is concerned, I do hear from teachers who use the material. Of course, some of it is not highly educational. I mean, for instance, watching me attempt to do the local dance in the main square in Zaragoza is distinctly not educational. Indeed, it's a very good example of what people should not do in public.
Yeah, but I would beg to differ for that very point. That's an education from what not to do, how not to behave, children.
Yes, I suppose actually we ought to be encouraging children to do things even if they're not good at them. And that's certainly what I do. I have a go, even when it's going to be humiliating.
You do have a go, and it's great. And, you know, the more vulnerable you are, the more approachable you are, and the more people want to sort of join in your company, and it's all good in the hood. So you talk there about winding the clock back and going back to the 1930s. If a future Michael Portillo was making this show, say, in, let's say, 2220, and they were to rewind the clock to 2020 and take a journey through what's going on now, as many journeys as they could, getting off and on, what do you think our future story of COVID-19 might look like?
I think our future is going to look a lot like our past. I think we're going to get over this. There's a very, very good precedent, of course, which is 1919. There was a terrible influenza epidemic, much worse than this. We now think that between 50 and 100 million people were killed. And yet, let's face it, most people, you know, have never even learned about that in history. And when you look back at the way history has been written, we talk about, you know, the end of the First World War in 1918, we talk about the depression of the 20s and the 30s and so on. Actually, that epidemic, despite its horrendous death toll, greater than the First World War by far, hardly gets a mention. And somehow we all went back to normal. So I think we will go back to normal. It's like, I don't know, when you have a bad episode in your personal life, if you're ill for 6 months, or, you know, if your house has been destroyed by a fire for 6 months or something, when you're going through it, it seems endless. When you look back on it, somehow I think we have a way of swallowing up, dissolving bad memories.
Yeah. This too will pass and all that. What would you do now if you were in charge right now? Come on, you've been very close before. And don't duck this question. Give us a minute on this. Come on, Michael.
I would want to be cautious, but also highly logical.
Right.
So let's just take the recent case of the ban. Sorry, not the ban.
The Ebridges.
The recommendation that we shouldn't travel to any part of Spain.
Yep.
And the imposition of a quarantine if we go to any part of Spain. Now, I can't quite understand how that has been justified because, you know, from the Canaries to Barcelona is twice as far as from Barcelona to London.
Yep.
So there is no connection between what's going on in Catalonia, what's going on in the Canaries, what's going on in Mallorca, even what's going on in Malaga and the Costa del Sol. So I think you've got to continue to be logical. I think we absolutely do need to clamp down where we have spikes. So if something happens in Leicester, we've got to be ready to move very fast. I think testing. We were told that at the beginning. It remains absolutely true. So I mean, rather than telling people to go for 14 days to their homes after they've arrived from Spain or indeed the United States or Mexico. Let's say we're going to come around to your house in 3 days' time. You better jolly well be there, and we are going to test you because we have the capacity to do this. Testing is what it's all about.
All right. Okay. Apart from the hokey.
Did I duck the question?
No, you didn't. So, apart from the hokey-cokey, which is also what it's all about. All right. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Portillo. Times Radio's very own Michael Portillo. 7 through to 10, Friday evenings, and the Great Continental Railway Journey Series 7 starts the night, BBC Two, 8 p.m, and it's marvellous.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three great guests already, but hold on, ladies and gents, there's still so much more to come. Director of Sky Arts, Phil Edgar-Jones, shares some exciting news about one of the best channels on TV. Investigative journalist James Nestor exhales deeply and tells us all about his latest book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. And star of Top Boy, Jasmine Jobson, chats her BAFTA television nomination for Best Supporting Actress. All of that and more still to come. So let's get right back to it. Vassos, who's next?
If you feel like your work just isn't working for you, then our next guest could be just the job. His new book, Designing Your Work Life, is out on Thursday. So please welcome the Silicon Valley design don who's made it his job to improve yours. It's the brilliant Bill Burnett.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for staying up in San Francisco. I'm presuming it's 10 to 1 in the morning there now.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, and it's fun to be here. So I'm happy
Good.
To do it.
Well, we do sell a few books on this show, so hopefully it'll be worth your while. Right, look at the title chapters. Always a good indicator of if a book's useful or not. Chapter 1, are we there yet? Chapter 2, money or meaning? Chapter 3, what's the problem? 4, my overwhelm is overwhelmed. And then we go into power and politics and don't resign, redesign. If you're going to quit, quit well, move on. Being your own boss. Let's dive into this. Let's get people buying this book. Bill, where do you want to start? It's up to you.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are working pretty hard right now. And in the COVID crisis, if you've got a job, you really want to keep it, right? You don't want to be moving around. So, and we like to, our method is kind of set the bar low, you know, but don't try to do heroic things, do small things, and small things add up to big things over time. So in the chapter, Don't Resign, Redesign, we have 4 ways you can redesign your job. You can reframe why you're working in Realist. You can remodel the job. You can do some small things to make it better or bigger things to kind of bash out a wall and do something new. You can relocate yourself in the company. Oftentimes the skills you've got are really valuable somewhere else, and that's kind of a reboot on your whole career. And obviously sometimes you need to reinvent yourself, maybe even go back and get some new training. But we really think that, you know, staying where you are and maximizing that the social capital you've got at the place you're already working is one of the best ideas we can come up
with. All right. Now, this book is page-to-page gold, people. Do us a favor, if you don't mind, Bill. Can you explain the Be Lucky experiment?
Oh, yeah. So this is fantastic. So Tony Hsieh, the guy who started Zappos, who got pretty lucky, he sold it to Amazon for $1 billion. He liked to make sure that the people who came to Zappos were lucky. So here was the experiment some psychologists ran. They asked people, do you think you're lucky or not? And people rated themselves from 0 to 10. 0, 1, 2, I'm not very lucky. I don't know why. Bad things always happen. 8, 9, 10, I don't know why. Good things always happen. I'm a lucky person. Then they had them do a task where they were reading, they had a big, thick newspaper. And they said, go through this newspaper and count all the headlines. Well, it turns out it wasn't a real newspaper, right? None of these, in the psychology experiments, whatever they tell you to do, that's not the experiment. It was a newspaper that had been doctored, and inside the various articles in the paper in a bunch of different places was a little piece of text that said, hey, if you've read this, the experiment's over, collect an extra $100. So here's the deal. When the people, the people who read the newspaper, got the right answer, but who said they weren't lucky, actually finished the task. They read all the paper, they got the right answer, but they never saw the extra text. The people who saw the extra text and were able to quit early were the people who rated themselves as lucky. So what the experimenters concluded was, it's not so much that it's luck, it's that you keep your eye on the ball, you get the job done, but you're always looking around to see what else is going on. You're paying attention to more than just the task at hand.
Yeah.
So if you want to get lucky, pay attention to more than just what you're supposed to be doing. Make sure you're looking for that little extra piece of information that might set you apart from everybody else.
And we'll leave everyone with this one. Once again, the book is Designing Your Work Life. It's a brilliant, brilliant read. Solid, I promise you, solid gold. Leave us with this one, if you don't mind, Bill. Sometimes it helps to want what you get as opposed to obsessing on getting what you want.
Oh, this is a really big one because people drive themselves crazy. I mean, you know, when we started this with the Designing Your Life book and now the Designing Your Work Life book, you know, we do what designers do. We have empathy. We go out and talk to people, and people say, you know, I just want to be happy. But the thing about happiness is, and this has been studied a lot. There's a guy at Harvard, Dan Gilbert, who's been looking at this question a lot. You know, people think, if I just had a little more money, I'd be happy. No, that doesn't. Once you got enough money, so your safety and security is taken care of, you're done. More money won't make you happy. More, a raise won't make you happy. A promotion won't make you happy. What Dan's discovered is that people actually synthesize or create their own happiness by wanting what they get, right? So it's not about striving for that next thing. Definitely strive for stuff. You know, set your goals. You know, go for the things that are important. But I can't tell you how many people I've met at my workshops, you know, in their 40s and 30s and 40s, and they're, you know, they're crushing it. They're the CEO of the company or the private equity person, or they're the, I met a woman who was the head, you know, the head of her law firm, and they're miserable because all they've got was more, but they didn't get what they wanted. And what they've done is they've gotten into this crazy treadmill of more, more, more. And that's not how you make yourself happy. You make yourself happy by enjoying the things you have.
Yeah. What you're looking for is where you're looking from.
Yeah. Yeah, and what you pay attention to is your reality. So pay attention to what you've already got, and you'll be a lot happier.
Great to meet you. Great to talk to you. And I hope to meet you one day in person, Bill.
That'd be exciting. Thank you very much.
Cheers, pal.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you, like us, go potty for Portrait Artist of the Year and silly for the South Bank Show, well, our next guest has good news here to reveal something very exciting indeed about the UK's only dedicated arts and culture channel. It's the ever-so-dapper director of Sky Arts, Philip Edgar-Jones.
Good morning, Phil.
I think Dapper is probably stretching it. Since March, I've barely been out of shorts.
Doesn't matter. Take it, Phil. So. Take it. First of all, Sky Arts, what a channel. Is there any channel in the world that does as much that is good for the world on the budget that Sky Arts does? I don't think so, Phil.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. No, we're very passionate about it. We're thrilled that we are taking it so free for everyone to watch now. And, it's been some time in the making, a lot of hard work by a lot of people. But we've got some incredible content on there. So it's a funny thing, actually. People often say to me, like, oh, God, arts is not for me. It's just ballet and opera and stuff that I won't really like. And while we do a lot of that, we also do a huge range of programming, everything from the Art of Drumming to Portrait Arts of the Year to Brian Johnson interviewing famous stars of rock and roll to Barbra Streisand concerts, Elvis concerts. You name it, we've got it. It's a great joy to be part of.
And all the discovering shows and things like that. And, it all stays up there for ages. So, you can get into one of the best rabbit holes of your life getting into Sky Arts On Demand or Catch Up.
Yeah, we've got about 2,000 hours, I think it is, of programming on demand. That's only available for Sky customers, of course. But, my goodness, I still do that. I mean, there's still things on there that I haven't seen, if you can believe that, and I try to watch absolutely everything. But yeah, you can be. I mean, it's one of those things. You're definitely not going to like everything that we've got on the channel, but if you search, you'll absolutely 100% find something that you are passionate about.
No, absolutely, you will.
We all love something, don't we?
Yeah, and it's the programmes are made with such passion and such sort of sensitivity and fond affection and fandom, if you like. Now, here is the big breaking story. Off you go. Tell everyone what's going on.
Oh, so Sky Arts is going free to air on September the 17th. Mm-hmm. So that will be on Freeview, so everybody can access it. So there'll be lots of stuff that we've been playing for years that people won't have seen, whether it's our Urban Myths comedy series, Discovering Film that you mentioned, Treasures of the British Library, Take Britain's Great British Walk, where celebs go on some of the great walks through the scenes of great paintings around the UK, Portrait Artist of the Year, we've got that. And a new series of that coming up, plus incredible new content. We've got a great documentary about the Style Council with all the Style Council involved in it. We've got Brian Johnson interviewing Dave Grohl in a 90-minute special, which is absolutely brilliant. We've got a great new series that we're launching called Landmark, where we're asking communities to get involved in choosing the public art that they'll have in their local area that commemorates the person or the thing that they're all kind of interested in their local area. It's just a whole ton of new things. A great photography competition, which we'll be announcing next week, where we're inviting people to send in photographs of the summer that never was, and that'll form an exhibition and a book at the end of that series as well.
Right.
So lots of great stuff.
So this is massive. Sky Arts, free to air on Freeview from September, everybody. So tell all your friends, because this is where all the arts fun is. Now, looking at your career, young man, it says here, Royal High School, Edinburgh, 1979 to 1983, then Queen Margaret University College, 1984 to 1987. And then the next thing is Creative Director of Big Brother, 2001 to 2010. But there's a big 14-year gap there, isn't there? So tell everybody, inspire people. How did you get from Queen Margaret University College? But how did you then to Big Brother? What happens in between?
Well, gosh, I came down to London to try and find a job because I couldn't get a job in Scotland. I became a sub-editor on magazines. Back in the day when you used to sort of manually correct people's spelling and grammar. And then from there, I very briefly got a job as a TV presenter on a show called Movie Watch on Channel 4. I was a complete and total disaster at that. I couldn't do it for coffee. And then I got a job, I bizarrely got a job on the Sky show as a presenter. Equally couldn't do that for toffee. Came to work on The Big Breakfast, Chris, when you were doing it. I used to do a thing called Snap, Cackle and Pop, which if you remember. And I remember one of the most thrilling moments of my life when I had a snap, you won't remember this, of course, but I had a Snap, Cackle and Pop on, I think it was a film one, and you said off the back of it, that was brilliant. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've made it. It was a brilliant moment for me.
And here you are in charge now of the most important arts channel on the planet, Phil.
Yes.
And you've been with
me. Lunatics have taken over the asylum, Chris.
It's fine. You got my vote, and hopefully I've got yours. It's working pretty well for us so far. You've been with Sky for 9 years. They've had the benefit of you for 9 years. And they are a brilliant company to be part of. I know that we're on their payroll. I get that. But I'm speaking the truth here. And you hopefully would agree with me there. Now, tell us about the big new studios they're having built at Elstree. What do you know about those? Because this sounds like a really a genuinely exciting project that will be good for Britain, good for the industry?
Well, there's a dearth of studio space at the moment, and it's an incredible new initiative. I can't remember, I'm not quite part of that, but there's a number of new sound stages where dramas of all sizes and hues can be made, partly with Sky and also with other producers as well. So it's an incredibly exciting thing. It's great for jobs in that area. It's great for the economy. You know, Sky is, I mean, as you say, it's a brilliant company to work for, and it's investing people, you know, and yeah. investing creative people. And I think that's part of the sort of Sky Studios push as well to really take that to the next level.
Well, Phil, it's great to talk to you again. And, you know, I was being completely sincere. That Snap, Cackle and Pop was amazing.
it was my best Snap, Cackle and Pop.
Okay, all right. Cheers, pal.
Okay, all the best.
Well
Thank
done.
You very much.
You're very welcome. Sky Arts free to air on Freeview from September.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We've got another guest to talk to you. Let's go, shall we? Vassos, over to you.
Our next guest made sure of her big break by throwing a chair across the audition room. That got her the role of Jack in the brilliant Netflix crime drama Top Boy, and she's now been nominated for a BAFTA. Just Helena Bonham Carter to beat now. Please welcome the joyous Jasmine Jobson.
Good morning, Jasmine. Live, I understand, from her bathtub. Good morning, Jasmine.
Yeah. Well, I'm out of the bath now, but good morning.
Oh, have you got any splish splash action going on there? Is the water still in? You let the plug out?
Yeah, it's all done now. I've got to get ready, get my hair sorted.
What kind of plug do you have? Do you have a plug on a chain, or do you have one of those pop-up plugs that are a nightmare because you end up sitting on them all the time?
It's a plug on a chain, yeah. I couldn't stand a pop-up plug. Oh, my God, I'd break it.
How often do you have a bath as opposed to a shower?
Well, I bath every single day and shower off straight away after as well. So
do you? That's interesting.
You do both.
Okay. And is that to
help... in your own dirt, innit?
Is that to help you psoriasis, the shower afterwards?
Well, no, that's more because I believe that you can't sit in your own dirt and then get out and towel off. You need to shower that off as well.
You're so right. I have a shower in the morning and a bath almost every afternoon if I can fit one in. Anyway, Jasmine, so you should be ready for the virtual BAFTAs. Congratulations on the big old nomination.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm literally over the moon. Words cannot describe how excited I am.
All right. And now, Alex Horn, who is married to Rachel Horn, who works on the show here with us. Rachel, say good morning.
Good morning.
He's also nominated for a BAFTA. And
congratulations.
Rachel's taken us through her virtual preparation earlier on the show. Tell us about yours.
I have literally just been up since about half eight, and I've just been blaring some really, really good tunes, drinking my lemon and ginger tea like it's like water. And then, just prepping myself, taking my time, really. I'm taking my time.
Rachel said that Alex, her hubby, has had to record an acceptance speech because everybody has just in case they win. Have you done similar?
We've got to record it, so I'm going to do that later.
All right. And do you know what you're going to say? Have you written it yet?
Yes.
Or? Okay.
Most definitely.
What kind of thing are you going for? What kind of sentiment are you going for?
I'm not telling you anything.
Oh, come on.
I'm just
going to
spoil it. What's that about? No, I'm not giving you nothing.
Well, come on, you've told us more. You've told us all. You've been very candid about your bathing habits. Tell us about your speech.
No, you're not getting nothing out of me for my speech. I'm going to leave that for later. Lord willing, I win. But you know what? I'm just so grateful to even be nominated, man. It's an absolute blessing.
Well, congratulations. I mean, what do you like most about working working as Jack on Top Boy? Tell us what really gets your juices going.
Everything about Jack. Like, I have literally put so much into that character that I could never actually, like, as much as obviously when you finish work or whatever, you do separate yourself from your character and you go home and I'm Jasmine again. But it's like, say if, like, I don't know, Top Boy was completely finished, like, I could never, ever take myself away from that character that I've had. She's always and forever going to be a part of me, you know? So, yeah. I love Jack, man.
Good for you. I mean, it is absolutely fantastic. No question about that. How did you get the gig? How did they come across you? How did you get onto their radar?
Des Hamilton hit me up for an audition and it was absolutely amazing. I went down there and I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to smash it. And I had about three recalls, four auditions in total. And my final audition, I actually got to meet all of the directors.
Right.
And it's funny because I heard right at the beginning of my interview you saying that I threw a chair across my audition in room, and I literally did. Des told me to go nuts, and I was like, are you sure?
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, you don't want to hit the roof and then possibly ruin an opportunity, because that challenge, just go for it. So I went for it. And yeah, I literally just missed the window by about a few inches. I'm so happy that I didn't hit it.
I wonder if that would have been a deal breaker as well as a glass breaker if you had hit the window. But, you know, never leave anything on the pitch. You don't want to go home regretting anything, do you? So that's
exactly.
Sound advice.
No, I wouldn't recommend to any actor to just pick up a chair and just be throwing it across the room. I would always say, always ask how far they want you to go before you just throw a chair clean across the room.
See, I think this is why you don't want to tell us about your speech. I think there could be a sort of chair throwing element, you know, curveball going on there. Be prepared, Rachel, because Alex has already recorded his speech.
Yeah, I don't know what he's done.
Well, I think as good as it is, and by the way, your husband is a genius and a thoroughly nice fella and a fantastic dad, but I don't think it's going to hold a light to what Jasmine's got.
No, I think Jasmine, if it was an award for speeches, Jasmine's going to nail it.
By the way,
thank you.
If you don't win, right, and your speech isn't used, I think you will win, but if you don't win, because you are up against the mighty Bonham Carter, who's also awesome.
And, I'm a massive fan.
And other brilliant ladies. Can we play your speech out on the show on Tuesday?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Great.
Of course, without a doubt, because it's still thanking everybody for an opportunity. Do you know what I mean? Oh. I mean, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, I woke up one day and just found out that suddenly I was a BAFTA nominee. It's not something that I was expecting. It's an absolute dream come true, you know? It's like, I don't do this to win awards, you know? I do this to send a message. So the fact that I'm being nominated for an award and being put in the same category as some of these women, it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, these women are really, really talented, and even to be considered on par with them is an absolute blessing. So I'm just so grateful.
See, but look, that's why you've been nominated, because that's why you're doing it for all the right reasons. If you do things for the right reason, you got all the right help from all the right places, even some you don't even know about or ever even realise. But you're awesome, Jasmine, awesome. So
thank you.
How are you going to stay out of trouble till 7 o'clock?
Well, my agent is going to be keeping me under manners.
All right, love to talk to you. Good luck.
Thank you. Okay. God bless.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Okay, everyone, this is something we all do 25,000 times a day, and we're still doing it wrong. The new smash hit book, Breath, the new science of a lost art, aims to get us inhaling longer and happier lives. So get your lugs and lungs around the breath of fresh air that is author James Nestor.
Good morning, James.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you are very welcome. Thank you for your book. Thank you for your 10 years of passionate journalism and investigation, putting this book together. Now, James, this is a new one for me. I think I know too much about you to be any good at interviewing you, because I've read your book and I've watched all the YouTube things you've done. And I almost know too much, if you know what I mean. So you just got to lead the charge here. It's our job to A, enlighten people, engage people, compel them, and to get them to buy your book so it changes their lives and the lives of their loved ones. Go.
That's a very tall order. I think that breathing is something that a lot of us take for granted. It's something that a lot of us believe that we can just do and we're going to be fine. But it's not just doing breathing. It's not just that we breathe. It's how we breathe that is so essential to so much of our health, happiness, and longevity. And that sounds like a tall order, but I've spent years in this field talking to the experts in this field, and it's 100% true.
Now, you are not officially qualified, but you are now qualified. And I know you sort of wear that badge very lightly, which is the responsible thing to do. It's the opposite of how I go about this show, to be honest, because I now think I'm a breathing expert in the last 7 days, because I've read your book and watched everything you've ever done and listened to everything you've ever talked about on a podcast. But it's all about nose breathing. So tell us, top five, if you like, you don't have to sort of enumerate them specifically, the major difference between breathing through your nose and breathing through your mouth, and why you have to do the former and not the latter.
So about 25 to 50% of the population habitually breathes through its mouth. And it's become so prevalent that people just think it's normal. But it's not. If you go into the wild and look at other animals, they're not breathing through their mouths. Dogs will breathe through their mouths to thermoregulate, but they will not be breathing through their mouths when they're sleeping. So the big difference here is that the nose is this incredible organ that is much ignored in a lot of medicine. And so if you take a billiard ball, just imagine you have a billiard ball and stuff it in the middle of your head, that's how much room the sinuses are taking up. So every time you inhale through the nose, you are removing particulate, you're heating up air, you're moistening it, and you're conditioning it so that you get 25% more oxygen in each breath through the nose than you do through the mouth. So it's so much more efficient.
All right, tell us about this this equivalence you do of breathing through the mouth is like breathing air as if it were frog pond water, as opposed to breathing through the nose when it becomes sort of mountain stream.
You really have read the book. Yeah, that was from a researcher in the 1800s that had found, he was one of the first people to go out and study Native American cultures before they were contacted, before they were given guns and liquor and all of that, when they were living the way that they had lived for thousands of years. And he found that they celebrated breathing as an essential medicine, and they swore off ever breathing through the mouth. They said it always leads to sickness and it messes up your face. It messes up the skeletature of your face. What we've learned so many years later is that that is exactly true.
If there's one book you read this year, just for your own sake, make it this one. Sarah said, James didn't mention what to do if you have bad sinuses and struggle to breathe through your nose, either nostril, both nostrils. Well, lots of people have misshaped noses and don't realize it. Talk about that, please, James, if you don't mind.
Sure. I have probably the worst nose of all mankind. I've broken it about four times. I have a severely deviated septum, but it's miraculous what nature can do if you just start breathing through your nose. That's not to say people don't need surgical intervention. Some people absolutely do. But what the chief of rhinology research down at Stanford told me is, if you have a toilet that's plugged, what are you going to do? You're going to find a way to unplug it as soon as possible. The nose has to be considered the same way. And the first step in that is to try to breathe through your nose as often as possible. This is a use it or lose it organ. So that's the first step.
All right, so what we're going to do here, James, and I'd like your sort of take on this, please, if you don't mind. We're going to start this nationwide sort of community where people get together in parks on a Saturday and they get some local breathing, local and qualified breathing therapists, and they get together for 90 minutes every Saturday throughout the UK on the back of your book at 10 o'clock every Saturday morning, or maybe 9 o'clock, and they get together to breathe together. Do you approve of that? We think we're going to go ahead with that. We're going to call it a matter of life and breath. Forgive the pun. Is that okay with you?
That's a beautiful idea. Do it outdoors so that, you know, and space people out. But what a wonderful thing. This is stuff that's free. It's available to everybody. And from what I've seen for the past several years, it can be absolutely transformative to health.
Right. What else do you want to say before you go? Because I know it's very late for you there. Well, very early in the morning for you there. It's now, what is it, 1 o'clock, 2 minutes past one in the morning?
I think that the last thing is that, you know, all of this seems so simple. And for so long, it's been largely ignored by the medical community. But that's starting to change now with COVID. And just because it's simple doesn't mean it doesn't work. If something can be measured, it can be studied. And if it can be studied, it can be proven right or wrong. And breath can absolutely be studied and measured. And we're finding right now that it can have just such a profound effect on lifespan, on mental health, and on physical health.
All right, the book is called Breath. You're listening to James Nestor here, and I've got to tell you, James, best book I've read this year, maybe top five of my life with a bullet.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you very much. I really appreciate
You're
that.
You're very welcome. And James should have been over here talking about his book on a talking tour, but we will worship at his altar of breathing forevermore.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Extreme wealth, consuming revenge and startling secrets. Just some of the ghastly but gripping goings-on dreamt up by our next guest. Her smash hit 10th novel, Queen Bee, is out now in paperback. And after hearing you two talk about it this morning, I really need to read it. So please welcome the Sunday Times best-selling sensation, Jane Fallon.
Good morning, Jane.
Hello.
Congratulations on your 10th novel. How does that feel?
Thank you. It feels bizarre and amazing and makes me feel incredibly old, actually.
How long ago was it that you put pen to the paper the first time from a publication point of view?
From a publication point of view, that would be 2006. From a personal point of view, it would be about the early, mid-1960s.
When you were born.
I've been trying to write books my whole life. But yeah, 2006 was when the first one got published.
So what was the first piece of literature you got paid for?
Well, if you discount all the TV bits and pieces that I did, then it probably was that first novel, because that was the first time I was brave enough to actually send it out there and try and get a publisher.
Right, and what have you learned from the first novel to the 10th, which is in my sweaty paws now?
Well, I have definitely learned that at about 40,000 words in when I'm writing the first draft, I'll have a complete breakdown and I'll start crying and throwing things around the room and saying this is all rubbish, I've got to throw it away. So now at least I know that that's inevitable and that I can work my way through it.
Right, well, Jane, I couldn't put it down yesterday. I didn't put it down until I got to the end. So here we go. First question. Who is Laura? Where did Laura come from in your writing, your creative brain? Why did you give birth to her and what is she here to tell us?
Well, I always like to try and write heroines that I think you'd kind of want to spend time with.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the fact that she has these sort of very strong sense of herself and these very strong morals. And I wanted to write something about that kind of very specific bunch of super rich people for a while. And I thought it would be nice to have a fish out of water go into that world. So I thought to have her, who was an ordinary person who was struggling, who was worrying about her divorce and her kid and her job and everything, and put her up against these people who just have all the money in the world and absolutely no taste or individuality would be quite fun.
But again, the common link is everybody has their vulnerabilities. Everybody's a bit broken.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's true, isn't it? No one in the world is 100% bad or 100% good. Everyone's got, you know, things going on. And I think it's definitely true that with Stella, the Queen Bee character, even though she seems absolutely awful, you hopefully warm to her a bit because it's all a front, really. It's all a defensive front.
And there'll be trauma in the past and you get back to that. Of course you do. I think the real Queen Bee is Gail.
Oh, I love Gail. Gail is the deferring one that doesn't know, the woman that Laura rents her house off. And she's the most normal person living in the close. She's actually the only other female in the close that works, for a start.
Now, Rachel and I both thought that Gail was too good to be true. And I thought, oh, you're stoking this one up. You're stoking this fire far too readily. And I thought she was going to turn on us. I won't say whether she does or not later on in the book. But awesome characters, awesome stories.
Thank you.
Now, the blokes don't come off great in this. Well, the two main protagonists, for obvious reasons. But again, broken people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're sort of trying to do their best in life, I suppose. I mean, I'm always slightly more interested, I think just being a woman myself, I'm slightly more interested in the female relationships. And also because I think I know them better.
Yep.
I understand female friendships better. So I always tell it from their point of view.
Right.
But yeah, the men are quite, you know, they're quite kind of, even though they're a bit mean, some of them, they're kind of quite sad underneath it all.
They're quite suddenly, but again, you know, the Laura and Stella are attracted to the guys, so there must be something going on there, and there must be sort of some connection, at least in the past, if not in the present, and definitely not because of McKenna. In the future, no, I suspected McKenna from the beginning, Rachel, for heaven's sake. Now, when you're writing a book like this, Jane, do you sort of. You plant all these potential entertainment and narrative bombs in the first chapter or two. And is it a case of the more you plant, the more confusing it is for the reader and the more clever you can be in the end? And it's your book, so you're entitled to be, of course.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. And I think my writing works best when I have a lot going on and a lot of plot. So I like to have as many kind of potentials for twists and turns and all that kind of thing. So I think it's exactly that. I like to plant bombs along the way to keep people hooked.
And the other thing, the other sort of glaring thing that jumped out at me was it's all pre-COVID. So it's almost like reading a historical novel now, because nothing of what we're experiencing now, which is so prevalent in our lives and on our radars, is going on. You know, when you sit down to write your next book, well, first of all, let's talk about this one, you know, being a non-COVID book, you know, it's very interesting to read that now, even though it's a fresh book. It's a brand new book, but it has no reference to the world around us. So it's more of an escape than ever.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, I think luckily for me in my head, it was set sort of last summer.
Right.
I think it's going to be a whole, and I think people need escapism at the moment, but I think it's going to be a whole different thing. I'm trying to write my next one at the moment.
Right.
And I mean, the best way I can think to get around it is to set it all in January and February, just before it all started. Because next year, are we going to want to read all about? Oh, I don't know. We're sick of it, aren't we?
Well, it's like, is anything good or bad? It's thinking that makes it so we're either sick of it one day or we're not sick of it the next day. But I take your point. Jan, Feb, will you be alluding to news, you know, whispers coming out of China about something that may or may not be true?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't quite know how many fictional months it's going to take for my story to pan out. So I'm worried I'm going to tip into the beginning of it. I think I've just got to kind of deal with it as I go along, really.
What might your next book be about?
My next book may, obviously I'm coming up to the crucial 40,000 words, so I might throw it all in the bin tomorrow, but it may or may not be around the idea that on social media you can be anyone you like. So you can be on there and make a friendship, but not be the person who you say you are. So it's kind of in that arena.
All right, Jane. Well, thank you for the book. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are we talking? Is it a five? Are we talking 5 out of 5, Rach?
Oh, we're talking 10 out of 5.
Okay. Yay. There you go. Jane Fallon from the author of Faking Friends.
Fantastic.
Queen Bee, Every Neighbourhood Has One. And Jane there talking to us live on the radio about it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.